Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are The Exterminating Angel and Murder on the Orient Express, which, of course, is the easiest sentence in the world. Hello, David. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Jill?
I am just terrific.
Well, I'm glad.
One
to
word
hear that.
Commits. The Exterminating Angel commits murder on the Orient Express.
Well, there you have it.
Right.
That could solve everything right there. This is certainly a morbid couple of titles for Thanksgiving weekend here, but what the heck?
Hey, it's the holidays.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, Joe, we've talked about going into an older film every once in a while and taking something out of the archives and talking about that. And I'm not exactly doing that this week. This is sort of the busy late year season when so many of the big films come out. Probably when we get into the silly season after the first of the year, it'd be better time to do a little more of that maybe. But this is it's opportune this week because there's a couple of things sort of going on in the movie news which relate to earlier films. Murder on the Orient Express, which I'll get to in a moment, is basically a remake of an earlier version that was made back in 1974. And I want to start by talking just a bit about The Exterminating Angel. This is a movie way back from 1962, so it's a pretty old movie. It opened in America, actually, in 1967, and it is one of the great classics of world cinema by the great Spanish surrealist filmmaker Luis Buñuel. And he made it in Mexico City, actually. He worked in all kinds of different countries over the course of his career, although he himself was Spanish, even worked in Hollywood a bit. But The Exterminating Angel is one of the great film classics from the 1960s. And it's kind of interesting that it's back in the news. First of all, it's a movie which has never been forgotten. It has always been talked about. It's been a favorite of mine ever since I saw it, which was probably back in the 60s. And I've seen it many, many times since. And in fact, a new DVD and Blu-ray edition of it has just come out from the Criterion Collection. And anybody interested can read my recent review of that in Cineast, the great film magazine. The Exterminating Angel is around again. It's never gone away, but it's around again in a beautifully produced new DVD and Blu-ray edition. And it's sort of been around anyway. It's kind of interesting because just recently a few years ago in 2011 when Woody Allen made Midnight in Paris, which I think may still stand as his most popular film ever. I actually don't think that's one of his best films. But in Midnight in Paris, there's a joke. It's sort of a running gag. Midnight in Paris is about a writer played by Owen Wilson who is transported through a kind of a time warp back to Paris in the 1920s. And there he meets people like Ernest Hemingway and all these other famous people who were hanging around Paris in the 20s. And one of the people he meets there is the young Spanish filmmaker Luis Buñuel, who was in fact in Paris back in the 20s. And this writer says to Buñuel at one point, he says, "I have a nice idea for a movie for you. A group of people attend a very formal dinner party, and at the end of the dinner, when they try to leave the room, they can't." Now, that is, in fact, the story of The Exterminating Angel. That's what it's all about. But in the Woody Allen movie, Luis Buñuel, the undisputed reigning monarch of surrealist cinema, who just loved the irrational in all of its many forms, his whole movie career was one decades-long attack on the reasonable and the rational and the logical. He says to the young writer, "Well, why can't they leave? I don't understand. What's holding them in the room?" Well, that's the whole point of the movie, is that there's no reason why they can't leave the room. They just don't. So that's what The Exterminating Angel is about. And anyone who is not familiar with this film, I totally recommend getting a hold of this new Blu-ray edition or DVD edition from the Criterion Collection and looking at it. It's just wonderful. And it's a totally surrealistic film. It is about people who cannot leave a room. They don't know why they can't leave the room. In fact, there is no reason why they can't leave the room. The door is right there. It is not locked. But they don't leave the room, and eventually, they run out of food. They're starving. They're in thirst. They're having fights. People die. Anyway, and then I won't tell you how it all comes out. So another reason why The Exterminating Angel is in the news is that it has been made into an opera. And this is a very, very rare case of a major opera being based on a movie. There have been movies made of great operas. Ingmar Bergman made the Magic Flute, for example. Joseph Losey made Mozart's Don Giovanni, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now we have an opera which is based on a movie. And the opera is by the very major British composer Thomas Otis, and the libretto is by Tom Cairns. And it just has had its premiere at the Metropolitan, its American premiere at the Metropolitan Opera House, conducted by the composer, and the production is by Tom Cairns, who wrote the libretto. And I actually am far from New York. I'm still down in New Orleans, spending a few months down here. So I am a subscriber to the Metropolitan Opera, but I was not able to see it there. So I went and I saw the live in HD broadcast of it at a theater here in New Orleans. And it is being done again. So anyone who would like to see the opera based on Luis Buñuel's great classic film, The Exterminating Angel, can have one more chance, because it is being done again next Wednesday. Well, people hear this at different times on the podcast, but on November 27, it's being done again. So I recommend it. Actually, I think I may have said that wrong. I think it's on November 29th that it is. Anyway, people can check it out on their websites and so forth. But the opera has been getting some press because it has the highest note ever sung at the Metropolitan Opera. This is just one more thing I'll mention about it. A very, 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 very high note. It is an A above high C, which apparently has never been at the Metropolitan Opera House before. The singer Audrey Luna sings it, and it is very, very brief, I must say, and it sounds sort of more like a squeak than an actual note. She actually does it a couple of times in the opera, but it is a fantastically high note, and you can hear it even in the HD version. And I am presuming that this will be out on DVD eventually. People can catch it that way too. But anyway, all of that just by way of touching bases again with one of the great, great film classics of the 1960s. And again, people who would like to hear the opera and can't get to the Metropolitan Opera House do have one more chance, because it's going to be done in an encore that will be broadcast in movie theaters across the country. Again, I saw it that way, and it's not a bad way to see it. You get to see a whole lot of detail. The opera itself is not particularly tuneful, not particularly melodic. It is very much an opera in the sort of the high modern style. It's sort of more like a horror movie than an opera, but I had a good time at it. So now let's get to something which is even more widespread, which is even easier to see, which is the new version of the classic novel by Agatha Christie, Murder on the Orient Express. I actually reread the novel when I was getting ready for the new movie version of it to come out. And I have to say, I like some of Agatha Christie's work. I find Murder on the Orient Express is too much it's an absolute textbook whodunit. And I'm really not that interested in whodunits. I'm not interested in figuring out who committed a crime. I'm more interested in the reasons why somebody commits a crime, or in how somebody commits a crime, than in figuring out who committed the crime. That's my general rule. There's exceptions to that. But there are many people, of course, who adore whodunits, who adore Agatha Christie, and certainly Murder on the Orient Express is one of the most famous whodunits ever written. I guess it deserves its reputation if you're really like whodunits. It's sort of, I guess, kind of a perfect one. And it all does involve a train, the Orient Express, back in the 1930s, which is stuck on the tracks. by a huge, gigantic snowstorm. It can't go anywhere, and somebody gets murdered. And the big question is, who committed this murder? Surely this person is still on the train because the train has been stuck in the snow. So the great one of Christie's most famous and celebrated creations, the great Belgian detective Hercule Poirot, happens to be on the train on his way to solving another crime somewhere else, and he has to now solve who committed this crime. Now, I will not give the ultimate spoiler by telling all of our listeners who it is who committed the murder on the Orient Express. It is, in fact, something of a surprise if you don't know the outcome, because it's kind of an unconventional outcome. In fact, it's a very unconventional outcome. But it does solve the mystery and resolve the story and all of that. So Murder on the Orient Express was made into a movie. It's been actually made into a movie or TV adaptation more than once. But the most famous version from the past was made in 1974 by the great director Sidney Lumet, one of the great prolific American movie makers. It's a pretty famous film. It won all kinds of Oscar. Well, it got all kinds of Oscar nominations. Ingrid Bergman ended up winning for Best Actress in a Supporting Role. Interesting, because I respect Ingrid Bergman phenomenally as an actress, and I really don't think this is one of her major performances. But she got the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress. And then there were a number of other nominations, a very deserved one for Albert Finney for Best Actor of that year, and a few other nominations as well. So it was quite an honored film. And it was a hugely popular film. Everybody loved it. And it really did have a sensational cast. There was Albert Finney. I mean, I'm just going to rattle them off here. Ingrid Bergman, I mentioned them. Lauren Bacall, Martin Balsam, Jacqueline Bisset, Jean-Pierre Cassel, Sean Connery, John Gielgud, Anthony Perkins, Vanessa Redgrave, Richard Widmark, Michael York. I mean, this is, talk about your star-studded cast. There's stars everywhere there. So it was a very popular movie. I looked at it again recently, and it holds up pretty well. It's an entertaining movie, and again, total whodunit. It's a little bit long. It's over 2 hours long, but it's fun to watch, and it certainly is fun to see all those terrific stars just sort of having fun with these roles. So the new version was directed by Kenneth Branagh, and I am not all that crazy about him either as an actor or a director, although he has an enormous number of admirers, and he also stars in it. He plays Hercule Poirot here. His performance, I think, is approximately one zillionth as interesting as Albert Finney's performance back in the 1974 edition. That was a really remarkable full body performance that Albert gave in that movie, and I don't think that Branagh's performance is anywhere near as interesting or as much fun to watch, but he gets the job done. And once again, we have one of these great big all-star casts, and once again, I will sort of rattle them off here. Willem Dafoe, Penelope Cruz, Judi Dench, Johnny Depp, Derek Jacobi, Josh Gad, Michelle Pfeiffer, Daisy Ridley, what a cast. Okay, so we have sort of the same thing all over again. We have the train that is stuck back in the 30s in the snow. We have the Belgian detective on board trying to find out who it is who killed this extremely obnoxious American. Once again, the cast of characters is very international. The cast is somewhat international, too. But we have this extremely obnoxious American. And the more Poirot investigates, the more he finds more and more people on the train had excellent reasons for having killed this guy. Although each person, there seems to be a reason why this person couldn't have been the one who killed this guy. So as the clues pile up, and there seem to be too many clues, Poirot remarks, in both the famous movies, movie versions of it, including the new one. There are too many clues here. What's going on? And there are so many people who just happen to be on that train who would have had a reason to murder this guy. He was obnoxious. He was a bad person in all kinds of ways. And again, by the end of the movie, we find out. So some of the performances I really, really liked. Willem Dafoe, who's an actor I've known for many years and who I really admire and who is also out right now in The Florida Project, a better movie than this. He is quite wonderful in his very small role. Judi Dench is quite wonderful in her very small role. I especially like Josh Gad, who is an actor who I think has a very bright future ahead of him. I thought Michelle Pfeiffer was very interesting. Haven't seen her a whole lot lately. Penelope Cruz, they're all just fine. Everybody's just fine. And if you like whodunits, and if you don't mind a movie that is all almost just like the 1974 version in so many ways, in terms of the basic story and the basic sort of mechanics of it. It's pretty much the same, sort of a redux of the earlier film, with I think a less amusing and fun to watch cast. If you like whodunits, if you don't mind the fact that this is very similar to the previous version that is famous from 1974, you will have a wonderful time at Murder on the Orient Express. It's doing well at the box office. A lot of people are liking it. Personally, I think people will be better off if they go back and just have a look at the 1974 version, which is readily available. You can see it very easily, and Albert Finney's performance alone makes the thing really quite worth watching. Aside from that, if you like Kenneth Branagh, you'll have a good time with this one. If you like some of those supporting players, you'll enjoy them a lot too. So we have a couple of cases of movies that came out, you know, back in the 1960s and 1970s, which are around again now in different forms. And in both cases, I think you'll really do best if you go back to the original, to the Murder on the Orient Express from the 70s, and definitely the film of The Exterminating Angel, which is a magnificent movie. But the new versions both have something to offer. And that is my somewhat old and new story this week, Joan.
Now we're going to be looking for Borrowed and Blue. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films The Exterminating Angel and Murder on the Orient Express.